and any song sung by Cher, which explains Gypsy Tramps and Thieves. I trust Virginia's book recommendations implicitly, so much so that if she said, this washing machine repair manual is the best thing I ever read, I'd read it without question. Joining Virginia is Chris Conley, the marketing associate of the library marketing team at HarperCollins. He hails from Indiana, spends his free time reading science fiction and wandering New York City parks. David Lynch is his spirit animal. And rounding out the team is Lainey Mays, the marketing assistant of the library marketing team at HarperCollins. She's originally from Mississippi, and her hobbies include visiting museums in the city, podcasts, and watching way too much Netflix. Her favorite book is Anne of Green Gables, and it's all because of a librarian. The Library Love Fest team is beyond enthusiastic about books and libraries. They buzz, they do podcasts, they blog at librarylovefest.com. They have a tiki hut from where they stream live on Facebook, so sit back, start making your lists. All these books will be available from your local bookseller, and of course, the Hunterdon County Library. So welcome, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us. We're really excited to be coming to you from our little conference room down in downtown Manhattan to talk to you guys about some books that are coming out. Some are already out. Will be out soon. Can you hear us okay?
I can hear you great.
Okay. So I'm Virginia.
Hi, I'm Chris.
And I'm Lainey. And again, thank you very much for this opportunity. We're really glad to talk to you guys. So, yes, as Jennifer said, we have a monthly Facebook Live that you guys should check out. Just like us on Facebook, Library Love Fest, and we do a Facebook Live. We sit in a tiki hut. We have adult beverages while we talk about books, and the more we drink, the more truthful we are.
I'm working, so I'm not allowed to have adult beverages, but please do have one for me.
Okay, we'll have one for you. We're not having one now. Chris and I are battling colds. Okay, so I guess we'll just kick it off with Chris.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Again, thanks for joining us, tuning in, watching all the forums. First book I'm going to talk to you about is November Road by Lou Burney. So Lou Burney, he's probably best known by The Long and Far Away Gone, which is a standalone thriller. He won a bunch of mystery awards for it, the Edgar Award, the McCavity Award, the Anthony Award, and the Barry Award, and I'm running out of breath, but he won a lot of awards for that book. And Lou, with his latest book, November Road, it takes place kind of in 1960s America, in the aftermath of JFK's assassination, but it's this kind of road book that has a love story at its core, but it's also a thriller. Kind of think of like a warmer No Country for Old Men by Cormac McCarthy. And it follows two very engaging characters. You have this mob lieutenant in New Orleans. His name's Frank Guidry. He's a smooth operator, but he's kind of devoid of he's willing to do anything to protect himself. And he inadvertently finds out that he was in some way involved with the assassination of JFK and that he's the last loose end. So he goes on the run across America, and his path crosses with this young housewife, formerly housewife. She's the mother of two daughters. Her husband is kind of a drunk, and she's in the middle of America with no real prospects, and she decides to take her two daughters and set off across the country. And her name's Charlotte, and she's a wonderful character. She's kind of timid initially, and as she sets off, she discovers herself. And then again, once she meets Frank, Frank sees an opportunity to use this mother and her two daughters as cover as he tries to escape the clutches of this very violent mob boss. It's received a starred Kirkus and Publishers Weekly review. It's very warm, and it's so fast-paced at the same time, and again, seeing Frank and Charlotte, their lives come together, it will stick with you. I've sent this book out to a lot of my librarian friends,
not me.
And the responses are incredible. So no. I highly recommend, and again, it's coming in October, so for anyone there who wants to go to the library, you have a little bit to wait, but you should be able to go over and get The Long and Far Away Gone, his previous novel, which will make you more than eager to read his next. So that's November Road by Lou Burney.
I second everything Chris said. I think there's so much love in this room with the three of us and with HarperCollins at large. You know, he's been doing a lot of library events for us, he couldn't be lovelier, and this book is really, it's off the hook. It's so great. So Chris just did a great job. Really makes me want to read it again. It's so, so good. So pretty jazzed about this November Road.
I guess the only other thing I'll mention, we have this program at HarperCollins called the Lead Read, which our sales staff votes on one title each season that we really want to blow out in a special way. So we did that with The Nest by Cynthia Diapri-Sweeney. We did that with News of the World, Paulette Giles. We did that with Women in the Castle by Jessica Shattuck. So our track record's pretty stellar with finding amazing books that we think really people need to read. And that's this book for fall. So we voted on this title. We really believe in it. And I think if you read it, you will too.
Yay. All right. I go next. All Happy Families by Jean McCullough. This is a memoir. Jean McCullough is the former managing agent editor for the Paris Review. She also was the senior editor of Tin House Magazine and the founding editorial director of Tin House Books. So she's written for, you know, a ton of different publications, the Paris Review, Tin House Books, New York Times, O, Oprah Magazine. She's sat everywhere. So now this is her memoir, All Happy Families, and it's about her wedding that took place out in East Hampton. And it's more than that. It's an intimate family memoir. This is, you know, the Hamptons. It's all privilege and lots of old money there and some new money. And so this takes place in mid-August, and it's these two families who are assembled for this wedding at this beach, at this mansion on this beach in East Hampton. And the father of the bride is a big drinker, and so he has been going through alcohol withdrawal and as a result suffers this massive stroke right before the wedding. So he is in a hospital. He's in a coma and then in a hospital in the next town. And that's how the book opens up. And it's 1983. This is her weekend wedding. And her mother is this very theatrical matriarch. And she doesn't, you know, it's all about image. You know, it's all about keeping up appearances like that show. And so they don't want anybody to know what's happened to the father. So they go on with the wedding. But he dies, and so instead of the wedding goes on, but as I say, he dies, and so instead of a planned honeymoon, the wedding presents are stashed in the attic, and arrangements are made for a funeral, and so that's how it starts. But it's really all about the repercussions from that weekend and how they ripple throughout the author's family and her in-laws' families, as they talk about, you know, loyalty and tradition and marital honor. And 5 years later, this marriage ends, and she returns to East Hampton and to her mother when they start opening up the wedding presents that had never been opened. So it's strangely witty, dark humor, and very poignant. And there's a bigger look here about privilege and family dysfunction, and, you know, that saying about unhappy families. I mean, this is a real take on what is presumed to be a happy family, and it's really not. And how many of those do we all know? So it's gotten wonderful reviews from Booklist. Kirkus says, an honest and sensitive portrayal of family dysfunction as well as an evocation of a dying world of old money, wealth, and privilege, a poignantly intimate memoir. There's another quote here that I really like. It's long, but I'm going to read it. It's by Christopher Merrill, author of Self-Portrait with Dogwood. He says, All Happy Families is a wry and poignant account of a doomed wedding, a house on a perilous dune in the Hamptons, and a world of privilege at its vanishing point. Jean McCullough's take on the American aristocracy is informed by her sharp eye for any sign of pretentiousness and her uncanny ability to render the despair at the heart of every family. Think of her as an Edith Wharton for the 21st century. We need her wisdom now more than ever. Vogue and Town and Country both named it one of the best books of summer, and it's a delicious read. That's All Happy Families by Jean McCullough.
Okay, Chris here again. I'm going to talk to you about another thriller, and as you continue to hear me, I have a bunch of amazing thrillers. I know my bio said I love sci-fi. I do. I also love thrillers, and each and every one I'm telling you about absolutely, like, took me by storm. I love each and every one. In particular, this one, Sweet Little Lies by Kaz Freer. So this is a debut police procedural set in London, so for anyone who's a fan of Town of French, in the woods, any your favorite kind of police procedural, this is for you. It's a debut that follows this young 26-year-old detective in London who takes on a case of a young, seemingly ordinary housewife who has been found strangled. And she's found strangled very close to the bar that her estranged father actually owns. And so you see Kat is her name, this detective, taking on this case and finding troubling kind of similarities to a disappearance that took place when she was a child. This young woman who Kat crossed paths with disappeared, and Kat as a child was convinced that her father, who was kind of a two-bit criminal who owned this bar, she's convinced her father was involved with this disappearance, and she's never forgiven him. So she takes on this case of this woman and then, all again, kind of is backtracking to her own past and her history with her father. And it's really fascinating. Kat kind of starts as this fumbling individual who kind of comes to grips with herself and grows up. And seeing this relationship between her and her father as she's going through this case is absolutely fascinating. It really plays on that kind of, you know, what you see as a child and how that can be so vastly different from what's actually happening in the real world. This is going to be the start of a series. We're publishing the next one next summer. This actually goes on sale next week on Tuesday, the 14th, and also receiving a ton of praise in the publishing world. There's this great review from Publishers Weekly, which was starred, who they call it a taut, psychologically twisted debut. Readers will root for the spiky Kinsella with her emphatic center and hope to see more of her in future books. Yeah, Kat is an amazing person just to follow through this story, and again, just a great twisty thriller for fans of Kate Atkinson, Megan Abbott, and again, Tana French. So that's Sweet Little Lies by Kaz Freer.
And that song always, that book always makes me want to sing, tell me lies, tell me sweet little lies.
Tell me
lies. Yeah, oh, we should have a book soundtrack. That would be so cool.
We can record it ourselves.
I love that. Lainey, you can play the harmonica.
Lainey's looking
triangle.
At a question of
triangle. We should do that. That would be super fun.
Yeah.
And then every other song could be a song by Cher. Speaking of Cher, I know you wanted to know this. So she signed up to do her memoir with HarperCollins, and it's due to come out in 2020. So there's a reason to live. More on that in the years to come. Also, one other thing I wanted to say, All Happy Families goes on sale next Thursday, August 14th, Christopher Connolly made me think that because he just gave you the on sale date. So thank you, Chris.
You can buy both books at the same
time. Oh, you can.
Family, Sweet Little Lies.
Yeah.
Nice.
Love it. Okay. Also, what did I mean to say? I meant to say happy birthday to Mary Ellen Monahan, whose birthday is tomorrow. So Mary Ellen Monahan, you did a great job raising Jennifer Winberry. Now, and so did John, who I don't think is listening. Okay. Now, where are we? Pieces of Her. Pieces of Her by Karen Slaughter. So, Karen Slaughter, you all know her. She is one of the world's most popular and acclaimed storytellers. She's published in 37 languages. She's got more than 35 million copies sold across the globe. So she's got 18 novels out there. She's got all those series, the Grant County series, the Will Trent series, and then she has the standalones. So I always feel like, you know, if you haven't started with the series and you're not sure where to start, or even if you should jump into Karen Slaughter world, start with the standalone, get hooked on that writing, and then dive in, go back to, you know, the first in a series of either the Grant County or the Will Trent. Now, I'll tell you this, Lainey will tell you this, and speaking with the editor here, a lot of people are of the thinking that if you're going to read anything from Karen Slaughter in the standalone world, I am not saying this because this book is her latest. I'm really not. This is the one to start with, Pieces of Her. It's, I think, her strongest. And, you know, there, Karen Slaughter, she writes really smart thrillers. And they can, they, you know, she does go to the dark side, shall we say. And not, that's not everybody's taste, but I, but the writing is so smart and so strong, and I think what, I think the smartest readers can still find themselves going, wait, what? And go back and flip the pages back to see what did I miss here? It's that kind of writing where you don't know what's going to happen next. It's really, really smart. She's a, she's really brilliant. And I think that I'm not alone. As I say, when I say the pieces of her is really the one to dive in, start there, get hooked, go back. So what's this one about? It's about a mother and daughter. It is it's about a mother and daughter, and the mother has a secret past. And the daughter thinks that she knows her mother, like we all think we know our mothers. And, but she doesn't, because she had a past. And so it starts out with the daughter in meeting her mother in the mall. The daughter's in, working in the mall, and the mother comes to meet her. And there is a shooting, and the mother is injured. And it is a very traumatic scene, but the mother survives. However, when she's brought to the hospital, she implores her daughter to say nothing. Don't speak to the cops. Say nothing, which is a very unusual thing. Why would you do that? Why wouldn't you tell them everything you saw? So that kicks it off. There's something going on here, and page by page, this this history of this mother's other life 30 years prior starts to peel away like an onion, and it's really, really good. And that's the crux of it. And I won't say too much more than that, because it's just very thrilling and very compulsive reading, and it really gets the mother-daughter relationship very well. And it's up to the daughter to figure out what the hell is going on here, because this lady's just not giving up any info. You read it, Lainey, right?
Yeah.
You concur?
Yeah. It's like you said, the editor told me, like, this is the book to read if you've never read Karen Slaughter, and because it's kind of, I mean, it still has her classic Karen Slaughter kind of grittiness to it, but it's very different. And I mean, she's on the run. It's so specific, and so, like, I want her to plan any escape that I have to do in the future, because it was so intense. But it's got a good twist, and you don't see it coming.
Yeah. And the what I think what's good to point out is important to point out is, first of all, they're very strong female characters, but they're not victims. I hate that. You know, I'm sick of those, and that's not this. They're strong female characters, and they're strong physically, and they're strong mentally, and I like that. And it's she's really, as I say, got this relationship down. It's more relationship-driven than, I think, any of her other books. Booklist gave it a starred review. And they said that, let's see, this departure from Slaughter's more gruesome standalone thrillers and popular series mysteries will more than satisfy her fans. There's a high-demand backstory here, that Slaughter is moving in a new direction. Readers will find themselves totally immersed in the suspenseful alternating storylines and won't want either of them to end. So you're getting the point of view of the mother and then the daughter going back and forth and back and forth, and it's like I don't know. You just can't stop reading because you want to know what happened. So I love this book. And she, you know, FYI, she's a big supporter of libraries, too. Just to know, she's given her own personal money. She's done fundraisers to help the DeKalb Library. And she has an organization called Save the Library. She's raised over $300,000 for libraries in need. She has a wonderful website if you want to find out more about that. And she also published a piece in the Atlanta Journal Constitution called Fight for Libraries as You Do Freedom. So she, you know, a lot of authors can say that they, you know, love libraries, and I'm sure they do. But then there are the handful that really put their money where their mouth is, and she is one of them. So that's Pieces of Her by Karen Slaughter.
Okay, I just want to...
August 21st, with a huge backlist.
Yeah.
So dive in.
All right. I just want to interrupt for 1 second. My co-host, Jim Thatch, has just walked in to the studio.
What?
Jim Thatch has just walked in, our co-host.
Hey, Jim.
Oh, hi.
Hello, how are you? I just put my headphones on, so I've missed everything so far.
Not unusual for him.
Oh, we got to start over.
Yeah.
Well, do you want us to, we could sing some Cher songs. That's about all you missed.
Oh, I missed that? Oh, darn. I'll have to listen to the archives.
Okay.
All right, and I just want to remind our listeners, this is a special edition of the Library Show on Hunterdon Chamber Radio with Library Love Fest. Okay, back to you.
Okay, this is Lainey. For my first book, I'm going to do If You Leave Me by Crystal Hannah Kim. This is actually went on sale this past Tuesday, so you can go pick it up right now, and you're going to want to. It's such a beautiful cover, so I hope it's showing.
I'm holding it up right now.
Sorry?
I'm holding it up.
So this is based on Crystal's grandmother's kind of refugee experience from her own country. So it's kind of interesting. It's a diverse female voice, and she knows a lot about this area. So it's based in 1950s South Korea, and Hami Lee is a 16-year-old girl who lives there with her widowed mother and her sickly brother, and they're in a refugee camp because the North has invaded. They're in the middle of the Korean War, and as she's living there, she's, you know, her father isn't there anymore, so she really has to pick up for what he lacks, so getting jobs and doing chores, and she kind of can't escape her really conservative mother who wants her to get married and do all these things, but they're living in kind of squalor, so it's hard to keep your traditional values when everything around you is just chaos. And so at nighttime, she escapes with her childhood friend, who has also moved with them into this camp with his family, and they go and kind of have nights out on the town, but it's, you know, as much as you can in this area. And it's kind of seedy. It's not really a place that they need to be, but so that's how she escapes, and she kind of is not allowed to be herself within all of this stuff going on. But then her friend's cousin moves into town, and he has a lot of money, and her mother automatically is like, yep, that's what you're going to do. You're going to marry him, and we're going to get out of here. So it's just it's a love triangle and finding yourself when you're not allowed to find yourself. So, and it's about loss, and it's just really like a great epic love story, and it's, I mean, and that triangle really shows through. It's really moving, and I think everyone would love it. It's got so many reviews. I can't even read them all. It has a Booklist star review. It was named a best new book by People magazine. They said it's an immersive, heartbreaking story about war, passion, and the road not taken. This is Crystal's debut novel, and it's very poignant. I think you're going to really love it. And Crystal herself is really great. She was at Book Expo, and we got to meet her, and she's just ready to go. She wants to do everything for this book, and she's done a lot of behind the book. So that's If You Leave Me by Crystal Hannah Kim, and it's available now.
Ooh. Rush and get it. Yeah, she's great. Again, we all had the pleasure of meeting Crystal, and some of the behind the book essays are really moving, as is the book itself, so I highly recommend. I have two books to talk to you about. Lainey skipped me, and I shan't ever forget her.
I did?
Yes.
I was so eager to go.
Yeah, we've been.
I hadn't been.
Yeah, we've been snuffing you, so that's okay.
I'm sorry.
No. It was your time to shine, and you did. So
Chris is crying.
I can do is talk about more thrillers and make everything okay. And I have two thrillers to tell you about back to back. Very different, though. The first is Pulse by Michael Harvey. Michael Harvey, he's a really well-respected, critically lauded crime thriller novelist. And all of his novels take place in Boston, where he's originally from. I think he's in Chicago now. And this one, Pulse, is a bit of a departure in that it has kind of a supernatural element to it. And I love genre mashups, really only when they're done well. Michael Harvey does it really, really well. We're describing this as The Force by Don Winslow meets Bird Box by Josh Malerman. It takes place in Boston, like his other novels, and it's in 1976, and there's this young man, 16-year-old Daniel, who's living with a very strange landlord who kind of talks about all these insane theories about, like, invisible pulses of light and energy that the human mind can harness, some crazy kind of metaphysical mysteries as well. And Daniel one night foresees his older brother, who's this star Harvard football player. He foresees his brother being murdered, and then later that night, he is his older brother, this kind of golden boy, is murdered in an alley, and it completely destroys Daniel. But again, why did he see it? Why did he foresee this? And then you meet these two detectives kind of on the ground trying to get to the bottom of this murder, and they themselves find kind of the case drawing them towards very weird, seedy underbellies of Boston and some very strange, seemingly kind of supernatural elements behind the death of this older brother. It's, again, so well done. It has that gritty element that Michael's known for. The characters are all so well written, though, and the pacing is spot on. And again, the supernatural element is just enough to be completely engaging but not overwhelming. It did receive a great Booklist starred review, which they call it an ambitious, brilliantly successful novel and a textbook example of how to make crime fiction and fantasy work as a team. Indeed, and this is totally made for film, and it actually will be. It's been optioned by New Line Cinema and 21 Laps. They're the company that did Stranger Things. And it's actually going to be adapted by a star of the Stranger Things writing staff. So it's a huge deal for us. We love Michael Harvey. And this is coming October 23rd, just in time for Halloween. It's a great read for that, or for any, you know, fans of great thrillers or science fiction. And then next, I have a little bit more of a traditional kind of Agatha Christie locked room mystery. It's called Under a Dark Sky by Laurie Rader Day. Laurie Rader Day is a, kind of a star of the mystery community. Her last novel, With Us, The Day I Died, was a bookseller favorite. She's won numerous mystery awards. And this, again, takes that locked room mystery and turns it on its head a little bit. You have this young, widowed woman, Eden. She is absolutely terrified of the dark, but while going through her late husband's belongings, she finds a reservation for a cabin at this dark sky park. And again, she's absolutely, you know, crippled by fear of the dark, but she thinks this, you know, fulfilling her husband's last plans will free her partially of the pain of the loss, but also free her from this fear. So she goes to this park, and much to her surprise and dismay, her cabin she'll be sharing with a group of old friends who are there to celebrate an occasion. Well, one night, one of these friends turns up dead, and everyone is a suspect. And that's where you get that classic Agatha Christie. You expect all the characters and what their motivations are, including the narrator. And it's just such a great setting, this dark sky park in Michigan. So very atmospheric. The landscape is very much a character of its own. But it's really great just, again, seeing all these friends and then this outsider interact and get to the bottom of who the killer is. So we're so thrilled about this novel, and it is available now. So that's Under a Dark Sky by Laurie Rader Day.
Okay. I'm not skipping anyone, am I?
No.
Okay. So, the next one is The Daisy Children by Sophia Grant, and it is out as well. It came out this week on the 7th, and this is Sophia's second novel. Her debut novel was The Dress in the Window. And this novel is a historical fiction title that talks about the New London gas explosion in 1937. So in Texas, a small town in Texas, New London, they had a gas explosion that caused over 300 children to perish. It's so terrible. It's a true story, and I had no idea about it, so I think this is so cool that it's a story that we don't know, and we can kind of learn more about. But this is a historical fiction, so based around that true story. It follows Katie Garrett, and she is living present day, but her grandmother grew up during this time. And after the explosion, all of these families that lost even multiple children in one family, they decided that they wanted to, for lack of a better word, replace these children and kind of get on with their life. So they had a group of children that were born 9 months after the explosion. There was about 13 of them, and they were called the Daisy Children. So they kind of grew out of all this rubble that was around this town. And so Katie's grandmother was a Daisy child. She grew up kind of in the shadow of a sister that died in this explosion, and kind of it affects her whole life. So her mother is very sad all the time, and she can't find her place. She seems like she is just a replacement, so she can't ever live up to this sister that passed away. And the grandmother grows up, and Katie is the granddaughter, and Katie's mother is estranged from the family, so she kind of has a gap in the family as well. She doesn't know this grandmother very well, and after the grandmother passes away, she goes back to Texas to hear the will and, like, learn more about her, and she kind of meets her distant cousin, Scarlett, and her life is very different than Katie's in Boston. So Boston and Texas, they're meeting for the first time, and they kind of learn from each other and learn more about a grandmother that one didn't know and one did know. It's great. I think it's going to be great for book clubs. It's got a PS section. Also, Sophia wrote an op-ed in Time magazine about her research and just how a tragedy happened, but it brought a community together and, in a way, kept these children's story going, even though it's, you know, terrible and they had these children right after. But in a way, it really did preserve the legacy of them and got people to talk more about them. That is The Daisy Children by Sophia Grant.
Okay. So now I will actually talk about some science fiction, some brilliant science fiction at that. I have Temper by Nikki Drayden. This is Nikki Drayden's sophomore effort. Her previous novel, The Prey of Gods, was one of the most celebrated science fiction novels of 2017. And in this standalone, it takes place in a similar universe. It's a very interesting land. It's similar to South Africa, but this is speculative fiction, so it's its own place. And in this world similar to South Africa, everyone is born with a twin. And twins share both vices and virtues, and these are embodied by little, like, markings on the skin. So one twin will be the good twin with a certain amount of virtues, and then the other twin, kind of in the opposite direction, is marked with vices. And that kind of decides your fate moving forward into adulthood. So it's a society that's very, you know, imbalanced and unjust. But you follow these two twins, Aubyn, who has six vices, which is about as many as you can have in this world. And they're marked on his arm, and everyone sees it. So he's a lesser twin, but he's charismatic and incredibly smart and very close with his twin, who's the kind of the good child and has virtues and is going to live a very comfortable life because of that. But Aubyn isn't willing to accept that. But at the same time, he's starting to hear very strange voices in his head telling him to do some pretty horrible stuff. And in the meantime, there's a large threat bubbling to the surface in the South African nation. So it's a really cool world that Nikki has built. It's part sci-fi, part fantastical, but very dark and imaginative and funny. I think that's the best thing about this book, is it's so funny. It's received starred reviews from both Publishers Weekly and Booklist. Publishers Weekly says, Drayden crafts a tangled, fantastical African society as the setting for her spellbinding sophomore novel. She takes speculative fiction in an exciting direction with a harrowing and impressive tale of twisted prophecy, identity, and cataclysmic change. Nikki's such an exciting and growing star in the science fiction community. She's a young black woman living in Texas. I think she's a programmer. She's an amazing writer, and again, just a rising star and bringing very interesting voices and perspective to a genre that really needs it. And the story itself does definitely deal with race and gender, but it's also a very universal story that I absolutely love. So I can't wait to see what comes next with Nikki. This book is actually on sale. So that's Temper by Nikki Drayden.
Okay. It's Virginia again. So, my next book is The Big Fella, Babe Ruth and the World He Created by Jane Levy. Jane Levy, as many of you may know, is the New York Times bestselling author of The Last Boy and Sandy Koufax. That was a New York Times bestseller, and now she, I mean, this woman knows her sports figures like nobody else. So this is the definitive biography of Babe Ruth. So the story goes that when she asked this museum director, Mike Gibbons, he's the museum director of the Babe Ruth Birthplace Museum, what he considers to be the definitive Babe Ruth biography, he replied, "It hasn't been written yet." With the big fella, Levy at last delivers it. And in this book, she covers two crucial aspects of his life that haven't been excavated by other biographers. She talks about his early childhood and also his partnership with Christy Walsh, who was sort of like the original Jerry Maguire, you know, his right-hand man, his father figure, his manager, his everything. And she also gives a real psychological insight into the Babe. So you get to see what he was like. You get to see what his childhood was like, which really wasn't so wonderful at all. And I think probably informed a lot of his later years, for good or for bad. But, I mean, so we all know that, you know, he was literally and figuratively a larger-than-life figure. He made a lot of money. He incurred a lot of fines. He was couth and uncouth, and he was, you know, he was thrown into this world that he, you know, he didn't really, he could swing a bat, God knows. But there's a lot that went along with that, and he really sort of cultivated the idea of celebrity. I think that was like sort of the beginning of, you know, sports figures as celebrities, as it is now. It's, you know, I think he was planted the seeds and saw how to do that. And so, again, with his this sort of look into his relationship with his Christy Walsh, who was his manager, he did a lot of damage control because, you know, Babe liked to play. He liked to play on the field and off the field. They had a good time. Actually, my father once caddied for him. Isn't that cool? Yeah, I actually think I found some old, raw, grainy footage of, it was out on Long Island. And he was doing it, and my father was young guy, and he caddied for Babe Ruth. And there's, I mean, I don't know if it's him or not, but it's so, so cool. But he, you know, he had a great time for himself, and he, he lived large. So this takes you through his childhood and through to his sort of devastating end, and everything in between. One thing that the book focuses on, too, is after he, after he hit his 60th home run in 27, he went on his barnstorming tour with Lou Gehrig. So it's all about this crazy, you know, time that those two had out on the road. It was a 3-week victory lap across America. He just, you know, he was just a big, big fella, and he had a great life. There's 32 pages of black and white photos, and 40 black and white images throughout. There's a lot of great research done here. PW, Publishers Weekly, gave it a starred review, said, Levy's captivating biography reveals Ruth as a man who swung his bat with the same purposeful abandon that he lived his life, which is, I think, a really a really good quote and kind of sizes up the book. Perkins gave it a starred review, too, and says, does the world need another biography of Babe Ruth? If it's this one, then the answer is an emphatic yes. They call it a sparkling, exemplary sports biography shedding new light on a storied figure in baseball history. More than that, what's to say? You got to read this book. It's a big one, as was he. One other thing that the author drew from 250 interviews and a lot of previously untapped documents and family records. So she's really got a lot of fresh information here too. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about it a little bit, Lainey? Because
Big thing is Christy Walsh, his manager, and he had a relationship with her, and so I think that's really important. But what interests me is the tour with Lou, and kind of when they say, like, the circus is coming to town, it really was. It was that big. Right. People came from everywhere, so it really did redefine modern celebrity. I think that's really interesting in the book as well.
There's a quote, I don't know if I can find it, about them, literally that the circus coming to town, when they said, when they were going on their tour.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can find
it. They hadn't had a tour that big since P.T. Barnum came through.
Right. When they called the tour a symphony of SWAT. The Omaha World Herald called it the biggest show since Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey and seven other associated circuses offered their entire performance under one tent.
Very funny. Okay. So that is that. Big deal. Jane Levy. That's a really exciting book to have under our roof. She really, anything she writes turns to gold. Those two other books, Sandy Koufax, just huge bestsellers.
So the next title is We Fed an Island by Jose Andres. And I think my theme for today is stories that need to be told. I think you'll see that later on, but especially in this book. So Jose Andres is a chef, and he is a founder and chairman of World Central Kitchen. He was named one of Time's 100 most influential people, reading that wrong. And he went to Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria, and he went there to help. He's a chef. He wanted to do his part, but when he got there, he just kind of saw chaos, and there was systematic problems where NGOs and other nonprofits were just kind of profiting off of this disaster and not really doing what they signed up to do. So he really didn't even have anywhere to go. There wasn't anywhere to help. No one had set anything up. So he had went to a friend's restaurant, and he cooked over 100,000 meals a day, which I can't even understand. But he really helped everybody, and they came together. He kind of became a point of he became a resource, but everybody in the community came together, and he saw that everyone wanted to help. They just didn't really have the opportunity to or know what was going on. So this book really talks about his experience there and what he saw, but also really how do we avoid this in the future? How do we do our best? I mean, these are people's lives. I mean, people coming in to help, they get to go home at the end of the month or whatever, but these people really didn't even have running water and electricity when they, like a month after they said they were supposed to. So this is a really important story. Jose has a really great TED talk about his opportunity. He's very funny. I think you're going to enjoy that. And also you're going to hear about this book. It doesn't come out until September, but there's so many great publicity events. I can't tell you all of them, but they're coming and you're going to hear about it. There's so many reviews. I won't read the reviews, but I just want to talk about some of the people who gave a sparkling review. President Bill Clinton, Anderson Cooper. It's gotten starred reviews in Kirkus and Publishers Weekly, Gloria Estefan. It goes on. Also, Lin-Manuel Miranda and his father, who are Puerto Rican and have done a lot for the effort, are going to do the foreword. And portion of the proceeds from the book will be donated to Chef Relief Network and World Kitchen efforts in Puerto Rico and beyond. So it's just so many good things. I don't know why you wouldn't pick this book up, but it's important to know. And I think someone who is not there and we're looking on, we don't understand everything. And I think this book is going to shed light on that. So that was We Fed an Island by Chef Jose Andres.
That's a big book for us. That's a really important book, and just really shows what you know private citizens can do when the government is leaving them stranded. Okay. I won't get political. However, I'm about to talk about another political book. Also by Jose. This is Jose Antonio Vargas, and this is called Dear America, Notes of an Undocumented Citizen. Jose Antonio Vargas is, he's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist. He's a filmmaker. He's the founder and CEO of Define American. This is a very, the layers are peeled back, and you get a real look into what an undocumented immigrant living in America deals with. This is a very unusual man. We met him he spoke at the ALA conference in New Orleans, and he was the ALA president's speaker. The president of ALA has a program every year at the conference, and they choose one or two people to be the keynote speakers, and he was it. And he tore the house down with his story of coming to America at 12 years old. His mother sent him here, and he was an illegal immigrant. He was born in the Philippines. And he hid in plain sight for years. He managed to, end up going to school. He wrote for some of the most prestigious news organizations in the country, the Washington Post and the New Yorker, while he lied about his status. When he was 16 years old, he
He rode his bike to go get his permit to get, and they handed it back to him and said, this is not legal. And he didn't know. So he brought it back to his grandfather, who he was staying with, and his grandfather said, this is the story, and this is not a legal card, and pretty much keep your mouth shut. And so this is his story, and how he managed to effect change for himself and others who are going through the same thing through his writings and through this Define American, which is an amazing website, which I encourage you to go to. There's lots of resources there, and a lot of video on him and others like him. It's really quite compelling. Once he admitted his undocumented status, of course he risked everything, his career and his safety. He still does, because he can't leave the country. He's challenged the definition of what it means to be an American, and he's advocated for the human rights of immigrants and migrants during the largest global movement of people in modern history. So this is a letter to America, and it's a window into his life, and it's a great argument about migration and citizenship and what it means to be home in the country that really isn't your home and doesn't consider you one of their own. It's heartbreaking and it's enlightening at the same time. A lot of amazing support for this book. Amy Tan, the Joy Luck Club, and a lot of other books. She said, "I cried reading this book, realizing more fully what my parents endured." And Dave Eggers, the author of many things, including What is the What, says this book couldn't be more timely and more necessary. No kidding. He's lived here for over 25 years, and as I said, he's a brilliant man, and he hasn't stopped. He doesn't stop, fighting for the rights of people who are undocumented through his work, through his writings, through his documentaries, through his website, providing resources. So also, if you go on Edelweiss, the catalog, the electronic catalog, there's a great piece that he wrote for the Times in 2011, My Life as an Undocumented Immigrant. It's so compelling. Oh, my God, once you start reading it, you can't stop. It's just all about, like, literally saying, he was 12 years old and he was handed off to a man at the Philippines International Airport, and he held his hand, he boarded an airplane, it was 1993, he was 12 years old. What did he know? Nothing. He knows a lot now, and he's sharing it in Dear America. So that's Jose Antonio Vargas.
Can I say something about this book? You sure can,
girl.
I'm very impressed by the writing, because it's very, observational as a kid coming in and not knowing anything just about the American spirit and all of that, but also, what people did to help him. He says he's, very blessed to have these people who cared, and when he told them that he was... when he told them that he was not there, all of these people came together to pay for things to help him, and I just thought that was really interesting, little things you can do to help someone and change their life. So I love that.
That's right. I forgot about that. He talks about that teacher.
Yeah. Oh, parents in his class.
Yeah. And he's in California, and they just named a school after him.
And he has a scholarship. At the college that he's on the board of, that was created for him.
So this is everything that this guy is doing, and that is now being done for him, and he could be, he'd be tossed out after all this time. Mm-hmm. So do yourselves a favor and check that out. And that's on sale September 18th, and a lovely man. Okay.
So continuing with the theme of stories that need to be told.
Oh, this one.
This is The Tattooist of Auschwitz by Heather Morris. This is Heather. She's a screenwriter, but this is her debut novel, and it's a number one international bestseller. She is from Australia, so it's already out there in South Africa. It's a number one bestseller. So Heather Morris met, just by chance, someone who said, "You need to hear this story," of a man that lived in Australia, and she said he was in Auschwitz, and you have to go hear it. So she goes through his house, and he tells her that when he was young in 1942, during World War II, this is Lali Sokolov, he was a Slovakian Jew, and he was taken to Auschwitz.
but because he spoke many different languages, they kind of, he could kind of help people around him who had no idea what was going on. They didn't speak the language. He would secretly show them what to do. And by chance, somebody kind of took him in, and he became the apprentice to the tattooer who put all of the, I never really thought about that before, kind of how the tattoos were on their arm, but it's very gruesome, just a warning, how they did this. And so they made him tattoo people who came through the line. So these are his peers, and I think that says a lot that they didn't even want to do it, that he had to do it to his peers. And so people came in, he knew the languages, so he would help them a little, and I think it was a little bit more of a comfort to know what was going on. So he was doing his work, and he was a little bit of a, he had a little bit of more freedom to move around the camp a little, and be in a better position than most. Not that it was a good position, but it was a little better than some. So he traded jewels and money, and he got different things for people in the camp to help them. And then someone named Gita comes through the line, and he put her number, but he looked up, and he said, I knew from there, that's who I'm going to marry. I'm going to get out for her. And it's such a beautiful story. It is a novelization, but it's based on this man's true story. And Heather sat down with him, and he just wants his story told. He got out of the camp, married Gita, and they lived a long life in Australia. They had a son, and the son didn't even really know about the story until after Gita died. And Lally said, I have to tell this story because I'm ready to join my wife, which is just heartbreaking. Graham Simpson, who's also from, he's a international best-selling author of The Rosie Project. He's from Australia as well. And he said, I would recommend it unreservedly to anyone, whether they've read 100 Holocaust stories or none. It's so good. It's one of my favorites of this season. I think that, like I said, it's a story that needs to be told, but it's an interesting take on the camps because you don't really hear from someone who's in a different position. And he really did his best with what he had. And, I mean, there's no good ending for any of these stories, but it's uplifting and it's true. So I think it's just beautiful.
Okay, that was, you can't do better than that presentation. That was so good, Lainey. I just wanted to ask you, Lainey, mm-hmm. where is that video of the son who's talking to the interviewer from Australia?
Yes, I was going to mention that. It's on our Facebook page. I don't know if it's on Edelweiss, but I know if you just search, like, Lolly Silk Love or Heather Morris, tattooist, it will come up. It's a news story in Australia. I just posted this feed, and I will post that video underneath so you can go find it.
Well, wherever you post that, on Library
On Love. Our Facebook page.
On Library Love Fest Facebook page. So after we finish here, give us a hot second to put that up there. But I'm telling you, okay, there's a couple things. So there's a video on Edelweiss right now of Heather Morris, who's interviewing. You don't see her. You only see Lale as an elderly man, and he's telling his story, and it will break your heart, but it's so tender. And this is a love story. This is, of course, has all the horrific elements that go along with any Holocaust story, but this is a love story, and I think, you know, Lainey's made that really clear, and it can't be said enough, I don't think, because you don't want people to miss this story, you know? But also this video of their son, who is now a grown man, and he's speaking to a reporter. They're doing a piece about his parents, and I just thought that was, I thought that was really compelling, because you really just get to hear how much they loved each other. I mean, they were just
until the end.
Until the end. I mean, that's the takeaway, is like, good God, these two, they were going to be together no matter what. It's very sweet, and I really love that. So we'll put that up so you guys can see that on our Facebook page.
We've gone an hour. Jennifer, are we okay?
Yep, I just got the thumbs up from Jim.
Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Keep going.
So you're good.
All right, so we have, I'm next with The Real Lolita, The Kidnapping of Sally Horner. Oh, should I stop talking or should I keep going?
No, keep going. There might be a quick blip at 10:59. We'll find out.
Okay.
Keep going. I knew you were going to talk about this one. I just knew this
one. You did? Well, Sarah Weinman is an amazing writer, and just knows her stuff and drills down like a construction worker at a construction site, on a construction site of words. I just made that up. It makes no sense, but I love the visual. Anyway. she came to the ALA and spoke at a conference, spoke on a panel of mystery writers. It was
nonfiction.
It was fiction that reads nonfiction that reads like fiction. That was the panel that Sarah Wyman was on, speaking about The Real Lolita, her book that's coming out on September 11th. It was going on sale. This is the story of Sally Horner. It's a very well researched novel about the abduction in 1948 of a young girl. She was 11, and her name was Sally Horner. And this abduction inspired Nabokov to write Lolita. Now, we're publishing this at the 60th anniversary of the publication of Lolita. But the real story here is about this abduction and how it informed him to write this book. I don't think a lot of people know about this, that this was inspired by this real life case. Can she write? You know, this does read like a novel. Sarah Wyman is a terrific writer. She's the editor of Women Crime Writers, which is eight suspense novels of the 40s and 50s. And she wrote Troubled Daughters, Twisted Wives. She covers publishing. She writes for Publishers Marketplace, and she's written for The Guardian and The Washington Post. And she's very, very well known in the publishing circles, and more specifically in mystery circles. She has a terrific blog. You can sign up to get her newsletter. I get it all the time, and it's really she doesn't send it out a ton of times, but when she does, it's just chock full of really cool information. So if you love a good mystery, or if you love something like this where it's a true life crime that inspired the writings of something else, she's who you want to be following for sure. So as I say, a abduction that informed the writing of Lolita. I would compare this to something like I'll Be Gone in the Dark by Michelle McNamara, which is a true life, the Golden State Killer, this crazy person who was going around California and committing these horrific crimes, and then who was recently captured. And there's schools of thought out there about who was more responsible for the capture of that monster. Was it the police work, or was it Michelle McNamara's book? And I would like to think that Michelle McNamara had a lot to do with that, and I'm sure that she did. But anyway, back to The Real Lolita. So Sarah Wyman is weaving together information about the time. It's a suspenseful crime narrative, cultural and social history, and it's an investigation. It tells this young girl's story for the very first time, and Sarah has done extensive research. So she's gone over public records. She's interviewed whatever relatives are still alive. She gets through legal documents, and she uncovers how much Nabokov knew of the Sally Horner case, and also how much he. The kind of the circles that the hoops that he jumped through to make it look like he didn't, that he was disguising that knowledge during the process of writing Lolita. So he was taking a big giant step back from that, and she's saying, I don't think so. So anyway, David Grann, I got to have a great quote from him. He says, "The Real Lolita is a tour de force of literary detective work. Not only does it shed new light on the terrifying true saga that influenced Nabokov's masterpiece, it restores the forgotten victim to our consciousness," which I think people can forget that. There was a little girl that at the center of all of this. It was a really creepy story, very creepy. And at the time, I guess it made sense to let this kid go with this. I don't know. I mean, now it would never happen the way it unfolded. But I don't know. At the time, it was very, very strange. And indeed, it did inform Lolita. So that's Sarah Wyman, The Real Lolita, The Kidnapping of Sally Horner, and the novel that scandalized the world. Do you want to say anything about it?
I love this book. I say it's like a research paper, but in the best way. It's detailed, and I don't know, I like true crime, so it was really interesting. But Yeah, it was creepy, and it kind of just, like, the fear of, because he saw her shoplifting. That's why he convinced her to go with him. So I guess just, you know, she didn't know anything, and now I guess it kind of shines a light on what to do, and it's creepy.
It's very
really good.
It's very creepy. It does remind me of I'll Be Gone in the Dark, which I also found really creepy. Hard to read sometimes because it happened, you know? But the way that Sarah Wyman writes is it does read like fiction. She has a wonderful way to write. It's not just reporting. It's chilling, and it's eerie, it's creepy, and it's real.
And giving her a voice, too. Like, you feel so bad for her.
Right. She personalizes this 11-year-old because, as you know,